The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Let's walk the talk
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Welcome to The Money Show this evening. It's wonderful that you've joined us on this Friday evening. The Money Show brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking, the proud gold sponsor of the 5th Pension Funds and Alternative Investments Africa Conference. That's Africanacity. APSA is a registered FSP. Welcome to The Money Show this evening. We're going to talk about petrol deregulation and what it means, how it might work. Gwede Mantashe, the Energy Minister today, putting that into the Government Gazette for consultation, for part of a steady process towards something that's been pushed for decades. We'll also talk about interest rates. And I wonder from you, how many times inflation has been above 15% Let's do it on interest rates. How many times since the year 2000 have interest rates been above 15%? There was that big spike up 1999, the Asia crisis, and interest rates went up to 25%. Interest rates rocketed to the high teens. I forget exactly what. I didn't have debt in those days, so I wasn't really paying attention. I did have some cash deposits, and I thought, oh, I'm getting rich. I didn't see the destruction of the value of money during that time. I wasn't really paying attention. We saw the prime overdraft rate very briefly in about 1998, 1999, spike above 25%. Since 2000, how many times have interest rates been above 15%? That is my question to you this evening. You can WhatsApp, you can SMS, you can phone, you can stand on your balcony and shout, but you're not going to get any response to that other than from your neighbours who won't appreciate it, so don't do that. But that is what we're going to be talking about this evening. We'll also talk to Peter Tempelhof, the best chef in the country, according to a survey of the world's best restaurants. Fane, his restaurant in Cape Town, at number 37 in the world. We've got three in the top 100. We spoke about it earlier this week, but tonight we talk to the chef patron himself. We'll do that at 27 in our luxury feature, the Friday File. I also want to be able to celebrate the end of a month of the worst load shedding that we've seen since the power crisis hit us 15 years ago. But I find it very hard to celebrate the end of load shedding, because no sooner do you pop the corks than you've got to put the corks back in again. Eskom saying stage one load shedding will be implemented at 1600 to 2400 this evening. And that's now. Load shedding will then be suspended as the system has sufficiently recovered. That's awesome. Well done, Eskom. My next question is, till when? Till the next breakdown of out-of-date equipment, the next deliberate sabotage by Eskom staff, the next round of strike action? Till when? Anyway, it's good news for now. There shouldn't be any further load shedding till next time. But hey, they've recovered weeks of lost work. Weeks and weeks and weeks of lost work. So that's good news.
The Money Show
with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
How many times since the year 2000 have interest rates been over 15%? That's my question to you this evening. It's not a biggie. I would ask Siobhan Redford, but that would be unfair because she is an economist at RMB. What we're going to talk to her about instead is the plan by government to deregulate the fuel price. Now, Raymond Ackerman led the fight for fuel deregulation in the 1970s because he felt that Pick and Pay should be allowed to sell fuel and discount it for the benefit of consumers. And he got shot down in flames. P.W. Werter didn't like him one little bit. If you're going to have an enemy, P.W. Werter is a good one to have. There's been a long wish for deregulation, and the energy minister today, Gwede Mantashe, gazetting his intention to introduce a price cap for 93 octane, and that will allow fuel companies to sell at whatever price they see fit. Economist at RMB, Siobhan Redford, on the line to us this evening. Right now, Siobhan, government dictates every aspect of the fuel price. It says that we will charge this much in taxes, we'll charge this much to transport it, we'll charge this much for the benefit of petrol pump attendants, we'll charge this much as a retail margin for the retailer so that they make a fixed amount on every litre of fuel they sell. And they dictate absolutely everything, don't they?
They do indeed. It is very, very clearly laid out in their monthly press release.
Okay, so they call all of the shots. Now they want to change the way fuel is priced, how it's charged for. What is this idea of a price cap? Explain what the thinking is behind a price cap.
Well, a price cap very simply is that they would say, here is the maximum amount you can sell. And, you know, this is where it's going to get curious, because no doubt for them to get to a cap, there will be some kind of formula that will be used. And, you know, as to whether it's going to be the same or similar to what we're already seeing or not is very much up in the air. We have had already, you know, there have been rumors of a completely new formula being used as well. And so the question is, what would that be for us to try and understand how beneficial it could or couldn't be for consumers?
Okay, so the government might recommend a price cap of 25 rand a litre. They might say, you know, you can charge a maximum of 25 rand a litre. And then it's up to me, as the oil company, will it be up to the petrol pump, will the petrol station owner, the franchisee effectively, who can call the shots, I wonder, on just how big a discount each individual petrol station will be able to charge?
That's actually a very good question, and from the little bit I've seen, it's not very clear. My sense is probably most likely the retailer. So you know, your franchisee, so either the franchisee or the organisation itself. So looking a little bit more like where you can drive around using very expensive petrol to try and find the lowest price.
But that's the point, isn't it? I mean, occasionally you'll drive past a fuel station that says diesel at a special price, 1 rand off the recommended price, or whatever the case is. And if you drive a diesel vehicle, you might pop in and put in a few litres to save a few bucks. It is going to be interesting, because certain petrol stations will be able to charge a higher margin than others, and others will have to work hard to draw customers in. So it will hopefully lead to some competition when it comes to fuel prices. But there doesn't seem to be that much of a margin to play within the space. What would that margin be? A rand, maybe two, that they could play with?
So the current retailer margin is sitting at 228 cents per litre. So that you know, definitely, I think, is, you know, if we took the current formula, would be the very obvious place where there could be some competition, especially if it were to be amongst retailers. The question is, and, you know, bearing in mind that there are a couple of other things which are probably a little bit more fungible, it's not going to be the taxes, and actually some of those taxes might increase as we, you know, try to discourage too much use putting out carbon up in the air, so increased carbon taxes. But, you know, something even like the wholesale margin, which is still actually, relative to the retail margin, quite modest, or storage costs. I was looking at it earlier today, and I was like wondering, so who are the storage costs paid to? What is the actual cost of storage? So what is the margin there per litre? So those are areas where, you know, it could maybe even go slightly higher than the 228 cents that retailers currently get per litre as a margin. But, you know, when you look at the current formula, there's not a ton of wriggle room.
Okay, so is it really going to make a massive change in our lives? This idea sounds very exciting, it sounds very sexy, but, you know, the retailers aren't going to discount 2 rand 28. They still want to make a profit. So that's why I sort of say to you, you know, much opportunity for more than a rand or a rand 50. It's going to become a quite a hard-fought space, and I wonder just how much difference it's going to make in our lives. Certainly deregulation is better than regulation, so it's probably a move in the right direction, is it?
I mean, it's good to give choice and to bring in some competition. And I think, you know, what the cap does is prevent it from going too high. Yep. So that it stays reasonable. Also, with bearing in mind, this is also only for 93 unleaded petrol, which is not sold in the coastal regions of South Africa.
So yes,
it's something I've learned through many a road trip where, you know, as I'm driving towards the coast, I automatically start asking for 93 unleaded, and they're like, no, we don't have that. And so a number of your coastal regions, and as you go low in an altitude, you don't tend to be able to find 93 unleaded. So it's not going to be all over the country necessarily if we only are looking at 93 unleaded right now.
And that's kind of weird that they've decided to keep it just at 93. Any thoughts on the reasoning behind that?
I wish I knew. I honestly have absolutely no clue. Maybe it is because it's a limited limited area. Maybe it is because, you know, so it limits also perhaps where the losses could be for government if a new formula or such a thing might lead to them having to make some sacrifices on their side too.
Siobhan, thank you. Siobhan Redford is an economist at RMB. Would you pump your own petrol if it would save you R1 a litre? It would mean that there would be no petrol pump attendants at that particular petrol station, or they would halve the number of petrol pump attendants, and you would say to the person who came up to you, no, thank you, I'll do it myself, and then you would get a discount. Well, maybe there, yeah. Would you do it? Just you and the nozzle? It happens all over the world. It does. People, it's possible, you know, you can get out of your car and not go to the shop. You can just pump your own fuel. Would you support that? SMSs, WhatsApps this evening on The Money Show. I'm curious as to what your thinking is in terms of protecting the jobs of petrol pump attendants. If it saved you R1 a litre, in addition then to the extra little bit of competition coming through in the fuel margin the government wants to allow people to exercise their discretion on, would you say, no thanks, petrol pump attendant, I can do this task myself? WhatsApp me this evening here on The Money Show.
WhatsApp Bruce
on 072-702-1702.
Let's look at the big issue of the week, and that was that surprise interest rate hike that came out of the Reserve Bank yesterday. It was a possibility, but the market had settled on 50 basis points. So certainly, it wasn't going to be 25 basis points. It turns out one member of the Monetary Policy Committee actually pushed for a 100 basis point increase in interest rates. Now, today, we're seeing massive revisions by anybody who's got an interest in interest. And APSA has said they're expecting two more 75 basis point hikes, one in September, one in November, and with a further hike coming through in January, probably 25 or 50 basis points. And that would take interest rates back to their long-term average of around 11%. Dr. Tabi Lioka is the independent economist. And lots of people are really fed up. Petrol prices are going through the roof. Food costs are rocketing. Everything is going up in price. Now the Reserve Bank is raising interest rates because, well, inflation is a worldwide problem, even though we have no consumption driving demand, which is usually the, you know, good reason to raise interest rates. Now it's all about the stuff that's out of our control, Tabi. And understandably, people are annoyed. But there's a very good, solid reasoning behind what the Reserve Bank is doing. So on our Money Show Explainer this evening, I'd like you to explain it, please.
So I'm feeling a bit smug because amongst my economist peers, I did expect, or I had pinned down 75 basis points.
Oh, well,
but most had expected a 50 basis points. And the reason for this is, and the question is not so much can we take on the high interest rate? The question is, how are we able to tolerate high inflation rates? And the only way to tame high inflation rates is by increasing interest rates. And I think that if the Reserve Bank had not increased by 75 basis points, and I can see that the FOMC markets are now expecting two further 75 basis points hikes, is because inflation is just increasing far faster than we had expected. So now, can you imagine what inflation would have been like if the Reserve Bank hadn't moved in the previous meeting and currently? Probably, you know, inflation could have been a lot higher, and especially because you must also remember that the interest rates are not for now, they're for 12 to 18 months time. So that's what they're doing. They're taming inflation in the future. So I think that it's the right call, and consumers will appreciate what the Reserve Bank is doing, I think, in future. But the Reserve Bank has to tame inflation, or else it's going to even bite us far harsher than we're experiencing now.
And this is such an important distinction to make, Tabi, because people feel interest rates are punitive. They feel it's personal because the money's coming out of their accounts. Already, just on what we've seen so far since November last year, for every million rand in mortgage debt you have at the prime lending rate, it's costing you an extra 1,250 rand a month just to service that debt. So on 2 million, it's 2,500, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. People are feeling like it's personal. And I mean, I suppose the most important message here is it's not. And what we've seen happen today as a result of that quite spectacular move in interest rates of 75 basis points, the highest in 20 years, it's calmed the currency market down. And in fact, the currency's begun to strengthen, which begins, should we hold on to that strengthening trend, to relieve the pressure on oil inflation and on the products and services we buy from offshore. So that's one of the reasons why, of course, we start seeing interest rates going up, is to protect the currency.
Absolutely. And if you look at the bond market as well, the bond market actually received the interest rate move quite positively, meaning that now investors are not going to, or haven't asked for higher yields for their investments. So we're not even going to pay much more than we'd expect if, let's say, investors decided that they're going to request higher yields for the investment. So better cover for the investment because they deemed the country risky. So they don't deem it risky. They rewarded us by actually reacting positively on the bond market. The currency reacted positively. And that is actually then putting a bit of a cap to a runaway currency and also inflation. So I think in the main, if we look at everything within context, this is the right thing to do. And that's why all central banks, most central banks, especially credible central banks in the world, are doing the same. They're increasing interest rates quite aggressively to try to tame inflation.
And two central banks that are not doing that, Turkey, and we've seen inflation rocket to 75%. And I think today Russia said they're looking to cut interest rates. And from a credibility point of view, well, there that goes, if there was any credibility there in the first place. But certainly it is sort of outlying central banks that are cutting rates rather than the more traditional thinkers.
Absolutely. There's a big distinction. I mean, Turkey is just below 80%. If you look at, for instance, our neighbor up north, where inflation is 191%. So, you know, there's a huge distinction between those who are doing the opposite and some of us who are increasing interest rates. There's a huge distinction with how inflation is responding and how punitive inflation is to consumers and also to savers, for instance, because they've kept interest rates at such low levels. So I think that, you know, all in all, I think, you know, we are feeling the pinch. We can't do anything about it. I think the Reserve Bank is trying to balance it. And I don't think that they will increase inflation interest rates to the extent that it will slow down economic growth. They're very cognizant of that. But again, as I often say, the role of stimulating growth is not monetary policy. It doesn't sit with the Reserve Bank. It sits with government. That's what fiscal policy is. So it sits with, let's say, Minister of Housing, who's supposed to build all these houses. It sits with municipalities who are supposed to fix our municipalities and encourage job creation there. It sits with Minister of Education, who's supposed to ensure that, you know, school infrastructure is up to standard, and also the education outcomes are up to standard. That's what grows an economy. So, you know, I think, you know, the Governor Lesetja is sticking to his mandate, watching growth, watching inflation, and responding accordingly.
Thank you, Dr. Tabi Lioka, independent economist this evening. Just to give you a forecast, we see interest rate hikes, says APSA, two hikes of 75 basis points, one in September, one in November, with a further 50 in January 2023, taking the repo rate to 7.5%. It'll take prime, of course, to 11%. which is where it was before the crisis. Earlier on, I asked you how many times have we seen interest rates go over 15% since 2000. And there have been two brief periods where interest rates did go over 15%, and that was after 9/11 and the crisis there, and then in 2008. Fairly short-lived periods of above 15% inflation. But the long-term trend on interest rates and inflation for the world and for South Africa is down. You can draw a straight line down from the peak in 1999 all the way down to levels, unprecedented levels also, that we saw in the crisis following during COVID. We're now starting to see a normalization of interest rates. It's uncomfortable, but I promise you, this is normal.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Nobody wants to hear about normal, I tell you that much. Tato, we're ending the week. Tato Mashiho, portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. We're ending this week better than we started it, which is a nice change because it's been a really, really rough month on markets, hasn't it?
Well, good evening, Bruce. It has indeed been a rough month and a rough year. So I suppose we argue a few moments of respite, and this week has definitely been one of those moments. Despite some of the central bank announcements we've seen this week from our own Reserve Bank and the ECB, of course.
Is this the end of the bear market, as some are prognosticating, or is this simply a respite in what is a long-term downward market cycle?
I'm afraid I think it leans more towards a pit stop, and the trajectory does seem to suggest that we're in for a bit more pain. As you may have seen, European PMIs came out today below the 50% mark, suggesting that manufacturing activity is in contraction. Business confidence also quite negative in that region, and we expect that Q3 we will see an economic contraction in the Eurozone and in other areas. Obviously, China not growing at all due to zero COVID policy. They're trying to expand on construction activity to try and meet their 5.5% growth target for the year, but that is extremely unlikely at this point. And so large parts of the global economy are trending towards recession. You see the yield curve in the U.S. inverted, and we are expecting another significant rate hike next week, perhaps another 75 basis points from the Fed. And these are not signs that would suggest that we have reached the end of the downward trend, I'm afraid.
And that's, I think, important that everybody gets that perspective from you this evening, Tato. I mean, one looks at markets and one looks at the mood in markets and the overall negative trend that has taken hold. And what usually happens in economies when we go towards recessions is central banks cut interest rates. They try and stimulate economic activity. But they're not going to do that. They're certainly not going to do that because they're terrified of inflation. And this is where we sort of get stuck in this no man's land, if you like, of are we going to grow? Are we going to see inflation run out of control? We need to raise rates, so therefore we don't get the growth. And it's sort of this vortex that sucks us down for a period of time.
It is indeed a vortex of sorts. We just hope that it's a transitory vortex. Unfortunately, we didn't have transitory inflation, but hopefully we will have a transitory recession. And raising interest rates whilst economic momentum is slowing is obviously not quite encouraging. But one hopes that the global recession, which is becoming more and more likely, will not be all too severe, shall we say. The U.S. at least is still showing some positive signs as far as employment is concerned, although some companies are now reporting negative numbers, yeah, especially in the tech sector. I'm sure you saw Snap and Twitter today with negative revenue growth. And so that is a bit of a concern. But other areas of the economy seem to be doing well. American Express, of all companies, showed revenue growth up 30% for the quarter, and they're suggesting that people are still spending on traveling and hospitality at pre-COVID levels. So mixed bag overall, but definitely there are signs that the vortex is expanding, especially in the euro area, and we've seen the dollar reaching parity with the euro as a result of that. So nothing is clear at the moment, although I suppose the only certainty is further uncertainty and a light recession. And the question, of course, being how severe, as you suggested.
Yeah. Thank you, Tato Moshiho, who's a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Certainly today, Twitter looked to be pointing fingers at Elon Musk, saying his distraction and his bid has caused havoc, and it's one of the reasons they're going to court next month in order to try and resolve their differences, to try and force Elon Musk, of course, to buy Twitter. After today's results, though, the valuation is going to be very different. And how much then would Elon Musk have to pay for Twitter for helping to contribute to the decline in its performance and value? But certainly that's Twitter's version of events. And hey, you know, you can't always rely on what you see on Twitter.
702.
Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
I do love Twitter sometimes. In a frenzy today. Absolute frenzy. Oh, my goodness me. Froth and damnation. After Thabo Mbeki's comments yesterday at Jesse Duarte's memorial, Thabo Mbeki saying that South Africa's headed for its Arab Spring moment. There's no plan to create jobs and, you know, get a social compact in. And Cyril Ramaphosa has failed to get the 100-day social compact he promised. Now, what's so ironic about Thabo Mbeki's absolutely spot-on commentary, no argument against that, is that it was during his tenure as president that his brother Moiletsi Mbeki was warning that, you know, things were going awry. And not long after Thabo Mbeki had left office, Moiletsi Mbeki, I think it was 2011, was warning that it was, South Africa was headed for a cliff. And his forecast was ignored. He was even shouted down in some circles, and he got the dates wrong. He was saying by 2020 there we would run out of money, and then South Africa would be ripe for an Arab Spring. Well, he's not far off. South Africa is, unless it gets growth going and gets the economy growing and grows up itself in terms of its approach to running the economy, then Moiletsi Mbeki's forecast of 2011 becomes tragically feasible. Thabo Mbeki seeing the light on that. Perhaps it's time they had lunch.
You're with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
On the next Money Show, Natasha Viljoen, the chief executive of Anglo American Platinum, will take us through the interim financial results from Anglo American Platinum. They're going to be down. They're going to be under pressure because the super prices that they enjoyed the previous year are not going to be as hot and frothy this time round. And then Themba Bavuma, the Proteas cricket captain, joins us for Other People's Money, as well as Nyimpini Mabunda, the chief executive of General Electric in South Africa, who's written a brand new best-selling book. Pick up on all of that next time on The Money Show.
The Money Show
with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Have you eaten at Fane? 072-702-1702. Fane, the restaurant. Our Friday file tonight, the chef patron of Fane, effectively labelled the best restaurant in the country by virtue of the fact that it is number 37 on the prestigious World's 50 Best Restaurants list. South Africa's got three in the top 100. In addition to Fane at number 37, there is La Colombe in Constantia, came in at number 56, and the Paternoster restaurant, Wolfgat, which is ranked at number 90. Now, we spoke about the rankings earlier this week, and we took a call from Chef Freddy Diaz. Now, Chef Freddy Diaz phoned us. Freddy is the chef at Sejour. It's a fine dining restaurant at the Houghton Hotel in Gauteng, and he's cooked at top kitchens all over the world and also eaten in some of the world's best restaurants. And he was bragging and showing off that he'd been to two of the top 10 restaurants and had meals at both. And I asked him just what the difference is from, you know, going for a meal at number 37 versus going for a meal at number one. Here's Freddy Diaz, the chef.
The magic of a restaurant like this is not just the food. Of course, it is the food. The food is the star of the show. But there's, you know, a beautiful restaurant is comparable to an orchestra. You know, you watch, it's about the service. It's about the waiters, the way they dress, the attention to detail, the way the food gets plated, or the, you know, the sequence in which the food gets presented, the beverages that you're paired. These are all very well thought out details. These restaurants are on this list because, not by luck or by chance, because they really care about what they do. They are the top of their industry. And that's why I say, like, you know, to people who care about this, I think it is kind of worth it. I mean, you know, in South Africa, if you're going to eat at Fane, you probably are going to fork out, you know, $2,500 per person per meal. And you know, that's obviously, that's depending on, like I said, if you care about that kind of thing, you will do that. And I mean, it's not something you're going to do every day. I also think eating at a fine dining restaurant is kind of one of the world's most accessible forms of luxury. you know, a lot of people, most South Africans can save money for the rest of their lives and they're never going to buy a Ferrari, but you can save for a few months to go eat at one of the world's best restaurants.
I thought that was a good point, actually. Thank you, Freddie, very much indeed for that call earlier this week. With us now, Peter Tempelhof, who's the chef patron at Fain Restaurant. Were you surprised by the ranking, or is this what you've been working to all your life, Peter? Good evening. Peter, take yourself off mute. He was there a moment ago. Maybe you had to go.
How about that? Can you hear me?
There we go. I thought you'd gone off to go cooking.
Because
of course it is. No. It's you're getting into your busy time. Thank you for taking time out on a busy Friday night to chat.
No. I'm actually. It's 10:46 here in the States.
Okay.
I'm actually standing in the prairies. So, anyways, yes. It's nice to chat to you, Bruce. Thanks for having me. It's kind of the pinnacle of not the pinnacle, but it's what I have been working towards for the last 15, 20 years. I bought the first magazine. There was a restaurant magazine 2002, 2003, and just to see the difference, to see the restaurants up there, the first 50 best, you know, there was something to aspire towards, and we've been chipping away at it, and so we never had the right combination of elements to get on the list until we opened Fain.
And Fain has been operating for how long? It is a fairly new entrant into the South African restaurant scene. How long have you been operating for?
Yeah, well, we opened 3.5 years ago. So we opened in November 2018. We were open for about 13, 14 months. Then the pandemic came, so we shut down for a bit. And luckily, we had a good year. So we had a bit of money in the bank, and we managed to survive and tick through. And then we reopened, and we had a fantastic email that we're in the 90. Or in 92 in the top 100. And it was quite a surprise to get it after being closed, basically for 2 years for the pandemic. So we heard a couple months ago that we were in the 50, and we couldn't quite believe it. We checked the email a couple times, and it was true. We had jumped from 92 to somewhere in the 50, and which was quite a surprise. We've been kind of, I don't know, euphoric wave right now since we got the news. And I still haven't slept more than 5 hours a night since then.
but not
for partying, just for sheer excitement.
No, absolutely. Freddie Diaz describing it, saying, you know, the food is absolutely critical. Of course, the food is important. And that people are coming to experience the food, but they're also coming to experience the environment. And you are, as is described, a sort of a fusion restaurant. It's Japanese meets South African or African food. And the interiors are glorious natural hues of leather and wood and brass, and it's warm and welcoming, at least from what I can see online.
Yeah.
And you get a very clear sense that this is, as Freddie puts it, an orchestration rather than simply an assembly of different things that you've put together to make it pretty.
Yeah, definitely. Everything is well curated. We're lucky enough to get a blank canvas. The landlord built the building for us, a bespoke building, so we could put everything where we wanted it. We had a designer who came in, and we gave him the brief that he must design a Japanese-African blended theme. And what he did with the beads above your head when you're eating is over 5,000 beads, which are reminiscent of the Japanese abacus. But then when he did more research into Japanese and African cultures, there was a lot more similarities. You know, the Africans have ropes and beads and leather and wood. So he had a lot of fun designing the two. And it's just the stars kind of aligned in with everything for us on this. You know, we got Jennifer on board, who is a front of house manager. You know, we got a fantastic kitchen crew led by Ashley Moss, who has been with me since 2008. And, you know, it was just kind of everything was worked towards us, and we managed to pull it off, you know. So it's something, could we replicate again? Yeah, with a lot of effort. It's possible, but probably unlikely.
But why would you want to replicate something that is truly unique? Because people will come for that unique experience to this place at this time in history to experience this, to have this experience. I'm sure you've got another 1,000 good restaurant ideas in your head. But when I look at the menu of guinea fowl wontons and KZN langoustines with persimmon and bamboo salsa, coconut yogurt and curry vinaigrette, I mean, that is an explosion of culture culture and flavor that is going to be experienced absolutely nowhere else on the planet, which is, I suppose, why the global foodie community who want to try out as many of these great restaurants as possible will travel to different locations in order to have this experience, because it is fundamentally different to what will be available at Geranium, the number one in Copenhagen, for example.
100%, Bruce. What people want when they travel for food is they want to eat the environment. They want to eat locality. They want to be able to taste what is around them. And I think that is what is unique about Fane. We've merged Africa and Japan, which is one is raw, the other one is really refined. And it kind of piques your interest to find out what we can make of it, you know, and how we blend the two cultures and the cuisines. And, you know, that's, I think, was the exciting thing, to be able to do that. And we're still planning a lot more exciting things, but, you know, it's been quite the journey, and something that Ashley and Jennifer and myself thoroughly enjoyed doing is exploring more South Africa but through Japanese eyes.
Do awards like this have an impact on bookings? Is there an immediate uptick the moment you get into the top 50 of the world's best restaurants? Do you see your website begin sort of glow red in the middle of the night as people all over the world start looking for a table?
Yeah, 100%. It really, last year when it got into the 90, the phone did not stop ringing. We filled up from August, and we've been full ever since. For dinners, lunches have been a bit slow because that's Cape Town. But now I see this week and next week we're filling up for lunches already. So, yes, it has a massive impact on business. And, you know, it's tempting to want to raise our prices and to, because we've got a lot of demand now, but we're going to hold fast. You know, we've got to be sensitive to the local markets and, you know, not just geared towards foreigners and the tourists who come in.
It's such an important point, that because many, many locals do feel hard done by. Of course, one, they can't get a table in their own city, and two, the pricing is normal standards is adventurous. I mean, you're not going to get changed out of 2,300 rand for a wine pairing dinner per head at Fane, you know. And People are willing to pay it.
Well, it is expensive. Hurt. It is expensive to put something like this together. You know, you need highly skilled staff. You need to buy the best ingredients. So some people think, oh, bloody hell, for locals it's expensive. But the margins aren't better than a lot of other restaurants who are charging a lot less. You know, because we want to use the best for people to experience. The best thing wants the best service and the best, you know. So, I mean, it costs a lot. You got, everybody's got to look sharp, and that's, you know, it's money and everything, all the fittings and trimmings. But and
that's the point. That is the point. You're not going for a plate of food. If you want a plate of food, go and have a plate of food somewhere where it's nice and cheap. If you want an experience in the environment that has been curated and crafted and created to balance the food and to give you an experience, well, it's about the experience rather than just a bought course.
Yeah. And nowadays, you have to have some experience, whether it's location, whether it's service and food, or a combination of all of them, to get ahead. To be better than the rest, it's got to be an experience. And that's what people are more so now than ever. They realize after this pandemic that they're willing to pay for experiences. And if you've got the right experience, people will pay for it.
Peter Tempelhof, thank you for sharing that experience with us.
Thanks,
this
Bruce.
Evening. And congratulations, number 37 in the world's best restaurants list, moving up and up and up. Moved up 30 places. 2-3 years ago, another 30 places now. Oh, next year will be at least at number 7. No pressure, Peter. Peter Tempelhof, the chef patron at Fane Restaurant in the United States, for us this evening. In a moment, we'll play the Brutal Biz Quiz. In the last couple of weeks, you've given me a free pass. You've made it incredibly easy. You've allowed me to win. And that is a terrible reflection on you. So what I would like to do this evening is challenge you to participate. Challenge you to dial, challenge you to call, and challenge you to answer some relatively simple questions if you've been paying attention to the world around you, which you do need to do as a matter of self-preservation. So this is to help you refocus that self-preservation this evening as we play the Brutal Biz Quiz. The Reserve Bank Governor Lesetša Ganyago has moved the prime interest rate to what? How much are you paying for your money at prime? It's a single-digit number, higher than it was this time yesterday. What is that number? 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Come and play the Brutal Biz Quiz.
Bruce Whitfield on 702. Call Bruce on 011-883-0702.
Ruth Lebez, quiz time. Let's see who's been paying attention. What is the prime lending rate? Skumbuso in Braamfontein was
9%.
First. 9%. Oh, fast out of the blocks. Fast out of the blocks. Absolutely. 75 basis points up yesterday. Two more 75 basis point hikes to come this year with 50 in January. That's another 2 percentage points by January. Money's becoming a lot more expensive. What does CPI measure, Skumbuso?
CPI.
CPI. Charlie Papa India. CPI.
Consumer Price Index. CPI.
Yes.
Consumer Price Index.
Yes, but what does it measure? It is the Consumer Price Index, but it measures one particular thing.
It measures the purchase price for consumers.
Inflation. Ah, yeah, I mean, you're right. Absolutely. And inflation. It's the rise in prices rather than the price itself. But yes, it's inflation. We'll give it to you because we're getting generous. Who does Twitter blame for its horrible second quarter financial performance? It's blamed one individual. What is the name of that individual?
Can you please repeat the question?
Who is Twitter blaming for its poor second quarter performance?
Oh, no, I don't know.
Oh, Skumbuso, thank you very much for playing this evening. Lefuko in Pretoria, who's Twitter blaming because it's underperforming? He's from your town, and you're not playing. You're not talking to me, Lefuko, so I've got to put you on hold again. Mandla in Rosebank.
Hello, it's Elon Musk.
Elon Musk is taking is getting the blame for what has gone wrong at Twitter. And, of course, he's the on-off-again suitor for Twitter. I would like to know the name of the restaurant that has made it into the world's best 50 restaurants list this year.
No, I forgot it.
Mother, we've just been talking to the chef. A bishop in Mpumalanga. Don't have nice restaurants in Mpumalanga, clearly. Patricia, last go. Otherwise, I win again. Patricia in Melville.
Sorry, I didn't get the question. Is that for the Twitter question?
No, we've moved on from Twitter. The South African restaurant, which is in the top 50 in the world, is called...
Fane.
Fine to you, Patricia. Well done. You're the winner of the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening. Coming through in the dying moments of the first hour of the show. And we just spoke to Chef Peter Tempelhof just a few moments ago. It wasn't that nice. But yep, number 37 on the list, rising really, really quickly. He's done brilliantly as Peter Tempelhof and his team at Fane Restaurant. In a moment, Eyewitness News, followed by the best bits of the Money Show from the week that has been.